Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 299. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
We're spinning the hits down here in Lakeville.
Phil Wilson.
Oh, I like this one, Steve. Who's this?
This is a guy named Josh Woodward. And speaking of names, our buddy Graham is not on. He's with family this morning, doing fun stuff, I'm sure.
I don't think you really needed a segue there, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of
names.
And speaking of Minivate podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Hey.
Speaking of stories, speaking of.
So you and Graham went to Mini Demo Thursday night. As it turns out, I couldn't go. But did you guys sit next to each other, or was Graham out hanging out in back having a beer?
Oh, Graham always goes and he basically does the networking thing pretty much during the whole event. I don't know if he came in and saw any other presentations or not. I did get in for the presentations. I was able to spend a little time. You know, our friend Lonnie Golden was there. He says, "Hey, by the way, Steve."
Oh, yeah.
And his son was there and was actually, I overheard him asking, "Lonnie, you suppose Steve Borsch will be here?" And I said, "Steve's going to be here." Little did I know.
Sorry. Just life constantly gets in the way. I hate that stuff.
Yeah. And let's see. It was, I got to tell you, and I don't know if you saw my tweets, but it was probably the best mini demo as far as presentations go that they've ever had.
Really?
The presentations were polished. They were well put together. Some were incredibly, unique and entertaining. I was really impressed, and I thought some of this stuff was some very inspired applications. Some, you know, I don't know if there's necessarily a market for them there, but I don't think that's necessarily the point of mini demo. So, I thought it was a really good event. It was at the Guthrie.
And yeah, did the venue change? Did that affect the feel of the?
I don't think so. It was in the, it wasn't on the thrust stage. It was in their regular proscenium stage. And I've always thought that theater is kind of uncomfortable. So I'm not, that's the only theater I've been to in that, in that new building. And it's just god awful uncomfortable. I think the seats they chose were probably really hip to look at, but darned uncomfortable for tall guys. So, but, other than that, I really enjoyed, I was particularly impressed by a state map DocSent EDU, I think. I don't remember what it was, but it was a very interesting teaching platform.
Docent EDU,
that's it. And well done.
So. I'll put a link in the show notes to the mini demo page that has all the presenters on it, so people can go to their respective websites.
Yes, I was actually trying to do that myself, but that and talking was really giving me a hard time. So,
yeah, it's going to be a bitch chewing gum.
It is tough. I thought one of the best. I really look forward to the next one, and we have we have Mini Bar coming up in April. So
right.
So, kudos to the folks.
That'll be great.
It was really well done, really well put together. I'm trying to think of some of the other highlights other than, that was probably,
Well, it's okay if it comes to you.
It was good. Yeah, it was good. I always suggest everybody go to, mini demos when you can. I think that the crowd outside is difficult to navigate. It's great to catch up with people you may not have seen for a while, but it is very, very loud and hard to really, you got to have a pretty wide open space, and it was a little tight in there. And, yeah. But I really enjoyed going in and spending some time watching some really great stuff, and, had the chance to sit, with Ginger Buckland. So, and I haven't seen Ginger in a long time.
Don't know Ginger.
She runs Cimarron Winter, which is a marketing firm. Oh. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. And a lot of people know her as Luke Buckland's widow. So
Well, but so
she's a very smart lady, and really had a great time chatting with her.
Excellent. So, retail analyst boy.
Yes, I'm here.
What's happening at Target?
Well, as we predicted when they replaced their failed CIO with the guy that was from Homeland Security, who was just months away from retirement, that he wouldn't be a long timer.
Right.
he did confirm, but that's Bob DeRhodes, did confirm that he's retiring this week, and that the company would bring in Mike McNamara as the new CIO. And Mike is a very successful guy. He's from Tesco, which is kind of the Walmart or Target of the UK.
Right.
And he used to work at Accenture before that, so he's, you know, longtime IT consulting background. So it'll be interesting to see what he does to Target, because Target's always been sort of a develop in-house sort of a philosophy, and I think that McNamara is more of a let's get a, you know, best of breed you know, third party solution and then integrate it into, you know, our operations. So
yeah,
so interesting.
Well, it was interesting to me with this guy that he headed the Change Technology Office in India.
Yep.
So I'm sure. Well, you know,
that was.
Yeah, Britain's still got a huge presence in India. So.
Well, but that's one of his innovations too, is to do a lot of, you know, the integration and development offshore and have control of it as opposed to working with partners. So
yeah.
He's been successful at Tesco, so hopefully he continues that success on this side of the Atlantic. He's apparently going to move here from the UK. So
that's very cool.
Well, he's looking for sunshine. That's all there is to it.
And maybe Target will go to the UK, because they've also talked about these express stores, and they're going to open a couple more up in Washington, D.C., and one in Chicago. And, you know, they've been successful where they've been. So this may be their way to get into some of the foreign countries, is through these very small urban stores.
Just yeah. Move all
hey,
that.
How's that for a segue?
That's very nice. All that, you know, all that spare inventory from Canada can make its move to,
that's right,
to Britain. So.
Yeah, yeah, they could. And they'll all be shaking their heads like, why do all this stuff have French writing on it as well?
Why is all this? Yeah, right. What are we going to do with all this back bacon?
So. At least they have put U's in the after the O's.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're on the move. And the new CEO looks like he's making some interesting and, you know, good decisions. So we'll see how it bears fruit.
Yep.
Another local activity, the Minneapolis is making their IT changes, which is interesting. $147 million they spent with Unisys. I see.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What did they get for that?
I don't know. I don't know. Cause you know, for IT, I don't know why they don't do it, just what I do, which is call Steve. But
yeah,
I mean, geez, $147 million. Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the whole outsourcing thing, you know, we've talked about this before, but the whole outsourcing thing, at the government level, I think is really a good thing, because it's much easier to buy expertise than it is to try to hire it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't be competitive typically on salaries and so on.
So it's just really interesting to me that they continue to go out of town. They go out of the state for it. You know, I can't imagine why they would necessarily have to go to an Arizona company.
One Neck IT Solutions.
One Neck, which
is a great name.
Ultimately acquired Visy, right? From what I understand in the article,
they did.
Visy's part of that. So well,
my question is, do they have a beard on that one neck?
What?
What?
Killing me.
What?
What a kidder.
I know. Just blew my mind, man.
Well, do you think there's any tie-in to the, you know, the fact that the Minneapolis schools gave those no bid contracts to that Memphis IT company?
Well, I mean, again, yeah, there. Well, that seems like a relationship of convenience, because the guy they hired to come in basically knew this firm in Memphis, right? Or had worked with this firm in Memphis. So, you know, I guess you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt. It's, I know these guys, I know they can do the Band-Aid stuff I need right away, and I can bring them in. So I don't know if it necessarily has to,
LLC.
Yeah. I don't know if it has to necessarily be a long-term thing, but you know, when you're a city council member or someone in authority and can make a vote and you don't know about something, you pretty much believe anything you're told. So
yeah,
it's like, okay, I'll vote for that. Sure.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's, yeah, it's, again, all of these services, all of this IT is very much available in the state of Minnesota. So why are we going to other places? Shouldn't we want to spend our money on our local economies and that sort of thing?
Right.
Who knows? Call me crazy.
Well, if you can find who you need though, with specific expertise outside, or maybe companies that are focused on one particular technology. I've seen this with Oracle work, where things have had to go out of state because the companies here that have specific, or especially in healthcare, have Oracle expertise, are tied up. They have too many projects, so they don't have the bandwidth or the people.
Well, I didn't garner from the Minneapolis IT, the city of Minneapolis IT stuff. Was that an open bid process, or I guess I don't remember seeing that in the.
They'll do an open bid.
But as far as
the past,
the Minneapolis school system, that's a no bid. That was no bid. Right, that was just, gave it. So.
Yep.
So to say it, maybe it was, again, it's, I think it was a relationship of convenience, not a relationship of cost or going through the proper channels, but
yeah. All right. I'm eager to talk about this next story because
I was
in my car going to see a client listening to this story on NPR.
Really?
And it's about a smartphone app developed at the U of M that monitors teens' driving habits in real time. So how fast the car is going and if the teen's exceeding the speed limit in that specific area, because you know the GPS knows where the student or the student, the kid is at any given time, and it'll also just basically shut down the phone so it won't text, you know, they can't make calls and so on while they're driving the car. And the app has to be running, but then also there's a notification to the parents if the kid defeats the app. He turns the phone off or shuts the app down.
Ooh, so the parents app, have been notified.
Yeah, but then I thought, you know, I mean, come on, there's got to be ways around this. You know, gee, mom, I don't know. I wrapped it in aluminum foil and my phone, and I don't know why you couldn't see anything.
The sale of those lead iPhone cases skyrocket.
That's right. But I actually thought this was really interesting because there has been one point where a good friend of mine's daughter rear-ended another guy because she was texting. You know, fortunately, nobody was hurt. The car was about, you know, $6,000 in damage because she just literally didn't even put the brake on, just ran right in the back of this guy. He had a F-150 pickup, so it was up high and just destroyed the front of the car.
Well, I will admit to being in one of those crashes. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, it was
a very
minor, you know, it was on slow moving traffic and I'll just take a look at my email. Thump.
Oh, so, man.
That's a lesson learned. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. We talk about these things and I try to remember, I know it's hard. It's a long way back, but I try to remember what it was like to be a teen and driving. And that was a very, you know, that was a really strong dose of independence and, you know, having, you know, my parents monitoring my every move sure would have killed that buzz. That's for sure.
No kidding.
So I guess there's a point where you have to say, you know, what point do you, you know, start trusting the people with their, you know, the kids to do their own thing. So,
yeah.
But again, I think that, you know, some sort of an application that does basically lock you out of your phone while you're moving, I think is a good idea. And I would take advantage of something like that because it's just too easy to give into that temptation.
Right.
To take it. Well, I'll just glance. Honest. So I'm glad the U is working on something like that.
Well, I know that at least for you, Phil, I'm not sure about you, Tim, but I know that you guys loved the Michael Landon TV show, Little House on the Prairie, where Melissa
watched it every week.
Okay. Well,
oh, of course,
Google had the graphic on their website today that, it's Minnesotan Laura Ingalls Wilder. It's her 148th birthday today.
Well, happy birthday to her. I bet you she's enjoying cake in a blender.
Well, so I never...
Wait, what? No, cake in a blender?
Well, being that old, you can't eat solid food.
Oh, I thought it was something about you. The fact that she'd been dead for a while.
She's been dead since... she's been dead my entire life. So.
Yeah.
I know. I'm kidding. It was a joke.
Not being from here, from these parts, maybe you can fill me in, but why do they consider, Minnesotans consider Laura Ingalls Wilder to be, kind of a daughter of the state when she, grew up in Kansas and Wisconsin?
Well,
I know she lived here for a period of time when she got married, but.
Well, and she wrote stuff here. That's why.
Oh, okay. That's
so,
why.
Yeah, she lived near Walnut Grove, which is, in the Southwest and Lake City, so on. So, they had moved around a little bit and they ended up in South Dakota.
In a covered wagon, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that was the primary means of transportation.
Back in those days.
Yeah, and they couldn't track. When she'd take the wagon out by herself, they couldn't track her. So they had no idea where she was.
How she was driving it.
And this was before tinfoil, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
The only way
her dad, Charles, knew is when the horses came home a little too sweaty. Then he knew she'd been speeding.
But he was Michael Landon, so he was a very nice guy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Horses are a little too sweaty. Been driving a little hard, have you?
We love horses here on the podcast. Oh my gosh.
It's been drag racing.
Yeah. Well, what are some other big stories that happened this past week?
Well, big win for net neutrality, according to The Verge.
Yeah.
Not according to Tim, but according to The Verge. Well,
okay. So let me ask you this, Phil, since you have had a career in radio.
Yes.
So do you think it's going to be great that the FCC gets to regulate the internet just like they regulate radio and television and, broadcast television and so forth?
Well, every regulation kind of goes through phases, as to how much they actually spend regulating things. I never felt that the FCC's regulations were by any means overbearing on radio. Sometimes a little bit trivial, but not overbearing. I didn't feel like it anyway. I think everybody kind of looks at the FCC and thinks of the seven dirty words as pretty much all they regulate, but there were some good things that I think that.
Well, so what are they going to do with podcasting once this goes through, which it's sure to go through?
I don't think anything will happen.
You don't think so?
No, not at all.
You don't think it's going to fall under their obscenity laws?
Nope.
We're going to be licensed? We're going to have to pay a license fee?
Nope.
Just like radio?
Nope. How come? I don't. Well, because the entire reason for this is that ISPs, any major provider, any mobile provider, whatever, they're trying to push themselves toward a future that is them as an information provider, not as a really an internet provider. And so if they win the former, then they're going to be competing directly with others who use their same network. And that's what this is all about at the end of the day, is trying to ensure that there's always a level playing field on the net.
Sorry about that, guys. I lost internet connectivity.
Oh,
was talking about the FCC and net neutrality, and they shut off my interweb.
That's right.
I hate when that happens.
Didn't shut me off though. We're on the same ISP, so.
I'm sorry. My apologies for dropping out there because I'm sure I had something profound I was saying, but I can't think of it now. But I look at it. it kind of comes down to, look, if you can't govern yourselves, somebody's got to step in and say, look, you're taking advantage. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, all those folks react and how they feel. Obviously, they're not going to be happy about it, but hopefully it will lead to a little bit better competition.
I doubt it. In fact, if this goes through, we're going to have higher prices and fewer providers. Well, if that's then, possible.
I don't know. I don't think so.
No. Well, we'll see. I'm not pleased that this is moving forward.
Well, we'll put a couple of links in the show notes if people want to read about it. And the Wall Street Journal article about the president's model utility.
My hometown. Les, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Yeah,
Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
No.
No. Cedar Falls.
Cedar Falls, Iowa.
I'm so
Cedar Rapids,
sorry.
Iowa is the city of five smells. That's where
I totally lost my head there for a minute.
Yeah. Cedar Falls is where you want to be.
Yeah.
Home of the University of Northern Iowa. Go Panthers. Anyway.
they need all the help they can get.
But I thought this was interesting to see this article pop up about President Obama's love of the Cedar Falls utility bill, because we were just talking about Cedar Falls utilities last week when we were talking about Rochester.
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting model and not a lot of competition there. I can tell you that.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. The only thing that bugs me about comparisons like this is when people say, oh, you know, look at South Korea, you know, look at the ubiquity and the speed of internet, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, yeah, South Korea is about half the size of Wisconsin, you know, so give me a break. You know, same thing with, the penetration in Germany of high-speed broadband. Okay, well, Germany is about the size of Montana. You know, the U.S. is a much different animal with respect to the vast distances that you have to cover. I mean, you know, if I was an ISP and somebody mandated that, oh, by the way, you've got to lay fiber to, you know, some miscellaneous town in northern Minnesota that's in the middle of nowhere. And oh, by the way, there's no way it'll take me 30 years to make my money back. How willing am I going to be to do that? So that's the only issue. So maybe this works, you know, for utility or city-based broadband in certain areas.
Well, city-based, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if you're going to see co-op-based utilities like, you know, it's for rural America, but I think for city-based, it's an interesting concept. It does put money in the pockets of it requires a substantial investment by the city utility, but it does put money back into the city's pockets. And I don't know. I can't tell you that it was substantially less money or it was competitive, I guess. But it was really the only choice in Cedar Falls, from what I understand. I wasn't there when they started it, but when my mother was there, she was, when I got her up on the internet. And it didn't seem like it was a really great deal by any means, but I found it kind of interesting. Very helpful folks. Small townish, so very nice.
Better than dial-up, right?
Much better than dial-up. Much better than dial-up. So another death of the tablets article, I see.
You know, I've been really resisting this. How about you, Tim?
I put this in because this is my thesis from before, that these large phones, like Graham and I have, they are cannibalizing tablet sales. I know I'm not using a tablet anymore. And I may, if I get another one, it's going to certainly be a full size, like 10-inch job, or maybe bigger if they come out with a 12-inch and not a 7-inch. So, you know, for the first time, we're seeing, you know, fairly substantial declines in market share for everybody across the board, pretty much.
Well, it's funny you say that because I don't have the mega iPhone 6. I don't have the Plus, just the regular one. And the clarity of it is so dramatically better. And just the slight size increase is so much better that I'm using it more than my iPad mini. In fact, for the first time, I stopped subscribing to the Verizon $30 a month data plan for the iPad mini because I'm just not using it as much. And I've been really resisting this because I do think tablets are fabulous, but it makes sense to me because the phones are, you just want to have one device. And if you can get one that works and it covers most of your bases, then that's great. Otherwise grab your laptop.
What's interesting, and they don't have details on who is in this others category, but presumably others, which is growing, which actually took 36% of the market share growth, are presumably like very low cost Android and Windows tablets, which you can get for less than $100, in some cases less than $50. And so those are, you know, continuing to grow, and where the upper end stuff is declining. And when Apple came out with the iPad mini, that was their number one seller very quickly. People just glommed onto that. So I'm sure that their 17 or 18% decline in share is mostly that.
Yeah. Well, they don't break out their numbers enough. So, yeah.
Of course, I don't know if you remember years ago when we were talking about the launch of the iPad, and I originally said, I just don't see any reason for an iPad.
Right.
Maybe I was ahead of my time. Maybe that was
you were.
I was.
You
I
saw
was
a reason when time. You got one, and now you're like, I don't know.
I don't know. I just think it's it's a share of the computer market. I don't think it's going to go away, but I just don't think it's there's significant updates in tablets that require people to update as often as they do phones or their underwear. So
do you ever watch TV or watch
no video, never watch TV
shows or anything on your iPad?
No, I don't. Well, I do watch some internet shows. I think, you know, like Comedians in Cars and that sort of a thing. But yeah. I'm not a huge video consumer on a mobile device.
Tim, how about you?
No, I do see like YouTube videos and stuff on my phone. But for the most part, if it's longer than 10 or 15 minutes, I'll Chromecast it to a TV or watch it on a YouTube app or a Netflix app or whatever on the TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do occasionally. I thought I would do it a lot more, but I don't. I do the same thing where we have Acorn TV, which is all British TV, and I'll just push that to the big screen, to the our HD TV through the Apple TV and be done with it. So I hardly watch it. Yeah, okay.
The final series of Foils War is quite good, by the way.
I know, we just started watching it.
Yeah, we saw the first episode last night.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah,
very good stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway,
and
speaking of Apple
and local, I just want to throw in here: local firm Velterra has a connection with Acorn TV, so really? They do a lot of work with them. Yes. So,
really doing what?
I think they're doing their site. I think they do their website. But I'm not 100% sure. But I was talking with Morgan Catlin over at Velterra when we were with HyperIQ and. Doing some things for Acorn, but they have a relationship with them. So, and I really like Morgan and that firm. I really, really like Velterra. Those guys are just really talented group. So, sorry, cool. My little plug for the group there. Sorry, guys. A little commercial. That's anyway.
Right. So Apple is talking to TV programmers about its own web TV service.
Yeah, there's a surprise. What are they
over
talking
the top?
And they're talking about all sorts of stuff with TV. I don't know if they've got a lot of dough, and maybe now is the time to get into TV. But I just don't know what Apple necessarily brings to the table for TV, guys.
They make a better interface,
maybe
for TV.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they haven't done it yet, but their Apple TV is long due for an update.
Yeah.
So hopefully they're able to pull something together, because Dish was able to do it with Sling TV, which actually looks pretty good. I would assume that Apple can do something similar, and then mesh that with all of their other offerings through Apple TV, what they have currently with TV and movies and that kind of thing. And I think it'll be a good solution.
Well, the only thing that bothers me is that there are things that we watch on. Like we just talked about Acorn TV, but also Amazon Prime, watching the stuff through there, and Netflix and all these other things. But most of the stuff that we watch is available on the Apple TV, but there are things that we watch in other places, and we have to do the push to through the Apple TV up to the regular HD TV through an iPad or an iPhone. And it's just a drag.
Right.
airplay. Yeah.
I mean, and some of the stuff isn't airplay ready.
Right.
And so it's just like, come on, seriously. I just want to have everything available in one place and be done with it. I did, however, take my new Samsung TV. I turned off the Wi-Fi so that I wasn't getting these messages all the time that it wanted to do updates and all of that. Yeah. It's like, come on, seriously. So
yeah, we got one of those last night and I'm like, what?
Yeah. I just turned the Wi-Fi off.
You have to look for your Samsung remote to turn the thing off. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, I think Apple's
there's your first world problem right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Pesky notifications.
Well, those apps that they have in there are no good to begin with, you know, and they're all the same apps too. So
why'd you get the TV? Just out of curiosity.
It was a good price, and I didn't care about the smart TV features. But of course, when I set it up, I set it up and blah blah blah, and tried it out, and I'm like, this is not good. So I use our TiVo to watch Netflix and Hulu and Vudu and all the main video streaming stuff, and use either Roku or a Chromecast for streaming the rest of the stuff. So it's much better than what's built into the, at least Samsung TVs.
Well, all I can tell you is that the TiVo interface isn't quite what I want it to be, but all I know is that my wife has been mad at me we've been married for 21 years and, no, 21. I better be careful here. Don't, Michelle, if you're listening,
the number right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were married in 86.
20 odd years.
Yes. Anyway, so she's been mad at me the whole time because
she's been mad at you the whole time.
Because when it comes to TV, I should qualify.
Oh, I was going to say, wow, what a lovely romantic story.
But she's been mad at me the whole time because she wants to do is just watch TV. And she's got 97 remotes, and I've done three different universal remotes over the years, and I've tried to do everything I can. And in fact, at one point, I even created a little manual with graphics on what to do and what to push and all of that. But she can run the Apple TV.
Yeah.
So how about that?
Well, the TiVo is easy too.
No, I know. I know.
I can't make that kind of commitment to television. Sorry, guys.
All right.
And as a follow-up, I did finally get a cable card after trying four cable cards to work. And now all four tuners of our TiVo are recording.
Oh, thank God.
Yep.
Thank God. The starving children over in Africa are really pleased.
So if anyone out there has, trouble with Charter, just keep going back and keep getting cable cards until it works.
Yeah.
And eventually it does, even though the people at the service office will tell you, well, these all only have two tuners on them. And the guys in the support say, oh no, you can get up to six tuners on this thing. whatever.
Yeah.
The complexities of this are just unbelievable. And apparently it's this way with whoever you get to supply your cable, you know? I think it's, I'll blame it on the cable card standard. It's not a good standard.
It's not a good standard. So, speaking of television, one of the reasons that I think Google Glass failed was the fact that you couldn't watch TV with it. So as you're driving or walking or having dinner with a friend, you could be watching TV at the same time. That's right. Why it failed, because it wasn't available on Google Glass.
I think Prince Charles would have used it often for that.
Probably. Yeah.
You see that picture of him in this article?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's because people carry him around, right? Oh no, that was the old days. Never mind.
The story didn't really give much insight into, you know, other than, they felt like Sergey Brin made it public far too soon. I guess that was the gist of the article, but I don't know if that's why Google Glass failed. Cause I don't necessarily think it's a failure. It was actually it's just not there yet.
Well, it's an R&D project for a wearable that was put out there as a finished product, and it's an R&D project.
Yes.
Right.
So, you know, so now under Tony Fadell, maybe it'll be reincarnated into something that makes more sense as a consumer product.
Or they'll take elements from it and, you know, make it less expensive and have it connect with a phone.
Yeah.
Yep. Let the phone do the processing and so on.
It's not going to ever be more than a curiosity if they sell it for $1,500, you know?
Right. Right. So. Well, too bad Graham isn't on.
Because
this other story that Neil Young's $400 Pono high def music player loses to Apple's iPhone in blind audio test.
And it's just, it is kind of interesting though, that the link we're providing goes right to what, Apple Insider. Is that what?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So it's like, okay. I always say reserve judgment on anything that has to do with audio till you hear it.
Well, not only that,
you don't hear it. If it sounds better to you, then get it, for God's sakes.
Well, but here's the other thing. The article didn't really say anything about what headphones were being used.
Exactly.
So if you use the crappy white headphones that come with your iPhone and then plug them in the Pono player, you know, the differentiation's not really there. But if you're going to spend $400 for a Pono player, it's likely that you're going to have pretty good headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, David Pogue, who did the test, is, you know, he's a musician. So I'm sure he would use the same high quality, very expensive headphones on both. And the net is that he didn't see any difference, or they didn't hear any difference in his test between the same headphones plugged into a Pono player with FLAC versus high quality MP3s. From the Apple store, presumably, with an iPhone, which is sort of damning, you know?
Yeah.
Because the whole Pono player thing is that you have to rebuy all your music, and they're, you know, it's $250 a track and all this, which, you know, will add up.
Exactly.
Well, you know, well, let's not just, you know, condemn the whole thing. The concept here is simple, that MP3 and audio that we're listening to now just plain blows. It sucks. So any efforts made to try and figure out a new way to have better audio quality, I'm all about. And, you know, whether it's, you know, the Pono player or whatever, I think you've got to keep pushing the boundaries. And they did it the right way. It's a Kickstarter campaign. Nobody, you know, forced anybody to buy it. So I think it's, let's see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I say.
All right.
Yeah, that's it.
We'll see if Graham likes it when he gets his.
So he did order one? Do you know?
Apparently he did. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, we'll hear a lot about it.
Last time we talked, I don't think he had decided, had he?
No, he did. He said he did. So we'll have to follow up on that.
I still am considering it. Again, anything, for God's sakes. I mean, I listen in the car now, even when I listen to XM or Sirius, or it just, I'm reminded of, man, audio sounds like crap these days.
Yeah, Sirius, we have Sirius, and the compression is really bad there.
Oh, man, it's terrible.
What's crazy is it's much better quality to stream through Bluetooth on MP3s on your phone than it is just to listen to the streams that are provided by Sirius.
So. Yeah. I agree. Okay. I will be re-upping my Sirius when the free subscription runs out.
So, so Steve, have you closed that barn door yet?
Which one?
You know, the one that's holding the whole...
Steve's security tip of the week.
The horses are back.
The horses are back. The horses are back. All right. So here's my security tip of the week. Never pay ransomware.
What is ransomware, Steve?
Okay, so, well, first
ransomware is?
Yeah, first off, my cousin, who I just sold an older MacBook to, because he's starting a new business, was using a friend's PC who said, here, you can use this for the next 6 months until you're on your feet and you're ready to go. And so he calls me one day and says, I need your help. All of my files are gibberish. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, like I open up a Word doc and I get this. First, I have this message that says all of your files are encrypted. You have to pay us and click here to pay us. And it was ransomware. So basically there was a Trojan on the Windows machine that encrypted all the files on there. And the thing is, if you pay them, then they supposedly decrypt it, which in fact happens sometimes. But they can, of course, encrypt it again and keep blackmailing you. But so ransomware is basically a Trojan that goes onto your machine. And Symantec did this report back in 2013 that said even if you pay the ransom to unfreeze your computer, there's no guarantee that thieves won't do it again. And they're netting between $60 and $200 to unlock a computer. And so the bottom line is if you do have ransomware, if you do get infected, you're going to have to get professional help. You know, go to some place like the Geek Squad who can go in and remove the malware and the Trojans and all that stuff. And of course.
So if you get hit, can they roll that back? Can they unencrypt it?
No, they cannot.
So you're going to lose all your stuff
if you don't pay them. And of course, the best thing to do is just to wipe the backup. Hard drive clean and redo it. But that, of course, make sure you have backups so you can wipe your infected drive and start over. You know, if you're on a PC, you know, use Microsoft's free antivirus, use an antivirus of some kind. Don't open suspicious emails and don't click on anything in suspicious emails. And of course, be very cautious about going to any rogue sites to download free stuff like software or torrents and, of course, porn. Ignore any phone calls that you get that your PC is infected. We're with your ISP, and we've seen that your PC is infected. And some people, especially older folks, will get caught up in that, and they'll give their credit card out over the phone, and that's it. You know, now they're compromised. And then don't install any programs from untrusted sources. And that's my security tip of the week.
Well, we use Mac, so we don't have to worry about this.
Yeah, yet.
Yet.
But it is, well, yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I try to explain to people is, you know, why is Windows more vulnerable than the Mac, for example? And it's, you know, it's not just the ubiquity of PC everywhere, you know, the Microsoft Windows, but it's also all the different versions, all the unpatched versions, but also that the core kernel of each operating system runs differently. The permissions on Unix, which OS X's based on and Linux is based on, the permissions are part of the core of the operating system, and you can't do anything if you don't have the permissions. You can't install stuff. You can't move things. So it's much, much, much harder to write malware for OS X. So there you go.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Thanks for bringing the horse back.
You bet. Anytime.
I'm so glad that those docs that I wrote that are gibberish are results of ransomware and not because I was writing in gibberish.
After a few cocktails.
It does happen.
That's right. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's segue into our cool thing of the week. I'm really growing to love this segment. It's really cool. And Phil?
Yes.
Go for it, buddy. What's your cool thing of the week?
I just ordered this a day or two ago. One of our developers at the office had one of these, and I said, I got to get me one of these. It's the GridIt by Cocoon. GridIt is basically, do you remember when you were a kid and you would weave pot holders for your parents? I don't know if anybody remembers that. Do you remember that at all, guys?
No, I made a keychain holder in wood shop, but other than that,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
But this is basically a grid of elastic bands, basically, that allows you to put all of the stuff that rolls around in your bag, in your computer bag, you know, on a board, basically. It's very cool. Take a look at it. They're very inexpensive, and I think they're a great way to really kind of organize your bag. You can put in your backup drives. You can put in, you know, everything from pens to mice, and spare adapters and dongles and all sorts of things. So I'm very much looking forward to getting this.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this is that when my daughter worked at the Apple store, we were talking one day and there was a couple of other Apple folks there. And I said, you know, how do you guys select, how are third party products selected for the store? And they basically all said, nah, I don't know, but Apple focuses on essentially premium product or highly useful product. mm-hmm. not necessarily all product. And the Grid-It is stocked in the Apple stores.
Oh, okay.
Didn't know that. So yeah, so it's not, no, it's, you know, yeah, it's not some premium new, right? thing. It's no. just, but it's a highly useful product. So
well, I got the, I, you know, I ordered the
Genius.
I believe it is the, what size was it? I think the 9.5 inch, they have, yeah, the seven, I no, it's not small, maybe the small one I got, which is 7.25 inches by 9.25 inches. You know, it's not a huge thing by any means, but I believe it was $9 from Amazon, 10 bucks maybe. So very much worth it, I think.
Hmm. Nice.
So
anyway, I'm gonna have to get one of these.
My cool thing of the week for me.
Monsieur Tim.
It is cool indeed. All right. Well, I've been talking about the Raspberry Pi off and on for years now. And this week they came out with the Raspberry Pi 2, which they're pitching as a PC. And our friends at Microsoft are going to support it with Windows 10, which if you're a developer, like those of us that listen to this show have to be developers, right? We'll run for free. So for $35, you can have a Windows 10 PC.
That's pretty incredible.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, you know what? So it looks like they put, because there's an HDMI connector on there, it looks like they put, and there's an Ethernet USB, two USBs. What about a display? Oh, there's the display connector.
There's actually four USBs. There's a HDMI, which the original has. And you've got your full Ethernet, although it's still a 10/100 and not gigabit, but, you know, it's $35. What do you expect, right?
Yeah.
Sound is improved. The clock speed is improved. And apparently from what I've heard, it's the overclocking headroom is much improved over the Model B Plus, which was sort of their speed bumped version of the B, which they introduced last year, I think.
Yeah.
So this is a very large improvement. You know, there's a lot of different OSs that will run on it besides Windows. Of course, you can run Linux. There is a port for, Android as well. So you can run Android on this if you so desire.
Nice.
Yeah. But I'm mostly, interested in getting one of these for projects, but also maybe using it as a Windows PC, because, you know, it's occasionally you'll have to test out how websites look in Windows. And, you know, I use emulation now inside of a Parallels session, but, you know, to have a very inexpensive PC you could hang on the back of a monitor is very attractive, I think.
Well, you know what I think would be cool? If you guys recall, a woman that worked for Leah Laporte from tech.tv or twit.tv, like Colleen, I think her name was, she built something called Skypeosaurus, which was a card-based rack that had a bunch of PCs in it. And yep. each one ran its own respective instance of Skype. And so each person that was on Skype in a show could come in on their own channel. The only kicker was, as I went out and looked at it, they first did it with a bunch of Mac Minis. And then I went in and looked at this Skypeosaurus that she had built, and it looked very interesting, but it was like, you know, $2,000. And maybe this is something that, you know, people will start to look at these and say, you know, gosh, I could use these for all kinds of different things, including building my own little Skypeosaurus.
Yeah. Less than $200. You could do four of these.
Yeah.
Stick them in a little power supply thing and, hook it all together and run Skype under Windows 10 on each one of them.
On each one. Very interesting.
Because you don't want to run Skype under Linux because it kind of sucks. So, but Skype in Windows is primo. So that would be perfect for you.
Yeah.
And these are available now. You can buy them $35, all the usual places, Element, whatever. I want to say 13, but I don't think that doesn't sound right. You know, just Google around. And Micro Center carries these. I'm not sure if they have these in stock yet. These Pi 2s, but they certainly the B Plus and the A's are in stock.
Yeah, I was last at Micro Center and I was looking at the Raspberry Pi in the Arduino section. It was really kind of a mess.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, with Radio Shack shutting down, it's we got to take what we got.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. It's true. How come we didn't have that on here? That's kind of a big story.
It's depressing.
That's a big. Well, it's a big story for, you know, our generation. It's probably, you know, it's like who?
Radio.
What?
Why would you want to go to a radio store, Phil?
I know exactly, Steve. And
speaking of radios, what is your cool thing of the week, Phil?
No, Steve. I've already done mine.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, Tim nodded off there for a minute.
Tim nodded off. The cocoon.
Okay, so my cool thing of the week is first a quick preface in that my brother-in-law just passed, and I helped one of his sons and then also one of my sister-in-laws do all kinds of photo scanning and building of these photo boards on foam core board and all that stuff. Well, the kicker is that there were three of us scanning, and I have a pro level scanner, and the other two have consumer level, you know, under $100 scanners. And I was really disappointed with all three, even my own, in terms of how they looked.
Yeah.
You know, it just sucked. You know, there's dust on other people's photos. I try to clean them off as best I can, but those little speckles show up as huge dots of light when you do a slideshow and you project it up on have it on an HDTV or project it up. And so scanning tons of photos can take hours and hours and hours if you want to do it right. Or you can send it to Scan Cafe. And I would recommend not shipping all your stuff there at once. You know, do it in batches. You can save a little bit more if you have them do a couple thousand photos at a time. But I just worry about planes going down and all that kind of stuff. But the quality of what they do is outstanding, and the prices are phenomenal. Go in and take a look at their pricing. You know, for a 35 millimeter color slide, you can have them done for 33 cents a piece, or if you do them in high volume, 22 cents a piece, and that's at 3,000 DPI. So, wow. You know, if you buy a 4K TV at some point in the future, you're going to be able to see this in full resolution on that kind of a set. They also do movie film and video, and they can make DVDs for you. And you can actually, when they scan stuff in, you can actually reject up to 50% of your order if you don't like the scans. If you just say, no, those things suck. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's really fabulous. Now, the one thing to know is that they take this stuff in-house, they break it all up, and then they ship it to India. It's all done in India, in Bangalore, India. And some people get nervous about that, and oh my God, what's going to happen to my photos and all of that. I would say if there's, you know, highly historical tin type photos, don't send those over, you know, have those done professionally and individually. But boy, I tell you what, if you're like my aunt and uncle who have literally thousands of 35 millimeter color slides that are just gathering dust, you know, have them scanned in. And how many families are out there? I bet you everybody listening to this podcast has family members that have all kinds of photos, and there's only one of them, and the negatives are gone, and everybody wants that particular photo. So some schmuck like me scans the thing in, and it looks like, you know, it's okay. It looks just marginal. And nobody's got it, and that's, you know, everybody can't have a copy. So this will allow you to do that and do it relatively inexpensively. So
do they send these back? What, do they put them in your Dropbox, or do they send them back on DVD, or how do these come back to you?
You can have a whole bunch of options. You can have them on DVD. You can have them all digital downloads. They can throw them in your Dropbox. You know, they support Google Drive. All kinds of different ways that you can then access those. So, and they put low resolution versions up so you can go in and look at all the scans. You know, they're not 300 DPI, huge resolution, 10 megabyte images for you to view, but they're good enough to make decisions on. But I've been really extraordinarily pleased with the quality. Really, really pleased. Better than I could do.
And that's saying something.
Yeah.
That is true. That is saying something.
Yeah. So I hate to say it because I kind of pat myself on the back sometimes with my Photoshop skills, but Anyway.
But we know, we more than anybody appreciate your Photoshop skills, dude.
So. Indeed.
Thanks, guys.
They are.
It's true.
It's awesome.
It is.
That's one of the.
It's true. It's true.
All right. So any new events coming up?
I think we've got pretty much all that we've identified in the past here. So, yeah. I mean, I think we put in SMB number 75 is set for the 20th of this month.
Yep.
Got visuals that compel and influence. And then the geocode, the Hennepin County geocode is happening on the 21st and 22nd. So that'll be a full weekend for you there. And, of course, a guide to outsourcing for small business, when to hire outside help is going on at the J.J. Hill Center in St. Paul. That happens the 26th. And, of course, Steve's involved in the IoT Fuse, which is the 19th of March. I'm involved in the Mobile March event, which is the 26th of March. Mini bar coming up on the 10th, or excuse me, mini bar 10 coming up on the 11th of April at Best Buy HQ. Which is a place that they've had mini bar many times and is always a great place to be.
And then this Twin Cities Tech Pulse.
What is this?
I have yet to hear one person say anything about this event. It's the premier technology conference and expo in the Twin Cities on April 21st at
it is?
The XL Energy Center. That's what it says on their website.
It is.
And they're proudly hosted by MyTech Partners and Success Computer Consulting.
Don't know who these people are.
Yeah, yeah. But they're sponsored by IBM, Dell, Lenovo, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I have no idea who's behind this thing.
Well, what's going on at it?
I don't know. They've got a picture of a great big event here. There'll be a link in the show notes so you can go look at it. If anybody out there listening knows who's behind the event, shoot us an email or go to our contact page and give us a heads up.
Says registration will open in February. So, well, it's February, so I don't know.
Yeah.
No registration's available yet.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
But it looks like there's going to be lunch from the picture.
Yeah. Yeah, which means the cost to get in is high.
That's anyway. Not necessarily so, because we at Mobile March always put on a fine spread.
And you we know, don't you're charge a lot of money. Absolutely right.
Yeah, so
sorry,
and I'm sure you will do the same thing. I'm sure. So
yeah.
All right. So yeah, there's lots. There's still plenty ahead next week, and we'll cover it on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Take care. Have a good week.